The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Monday, Gary, how are you?
I'm doing very good. I can't complain. Just looking at the results here of the Venezuela election.
Yeah.
Let's see. What was his disapproval rating?
75% disapproval rating.
Maduro's rating, 75% disapproval.
Yeah.
He wins 68% of the vote.
And CNN is ready to call it.
So I just saw that one.
And he...
First thing he did was he said he wants to meet with some of the other candidates to figure out a way
to work together.
To work together to solve their problems.
Okay.
Now you know.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm sure that meeting's going to happen very quickly. We're all going to come together. That's right.
Make Venezuela great again.
68% yes. of the vote, 75% disapproval.
Yeah,
rating.
You've already got a problem, right? You probably have a challenge there.
Yes. I don't have my calculator with me, but something's not right.
Well, the best royal wedding meme over the weekend was certainly I stopped paying attention to royal weddings after 1776.
You're right, exactly.
No, I did not get up at 4 a.m.
Is that when it aired live? Was it 4 a.m.?
Apparently, it started at 4 a.m., yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
By the time I got up, you know, people had been commenting on it, the vast majority.
Mm.
The gender of females, the vast majority, on, at least on my social media, that I saw had commented on it. I did have to send one of the tweets out. That I saw. I don't even know who the tweet was from. Somebody who's famous who I didn't know.
Right.
And it said, this gives women like us hope that we can find our prince. And I sent it out to conservative women that I knew to get their response on it.
Women like us? Are they actresses?
Well, it was actually, it was a woman who said...
It was somebody famous who tweeted it.
That I just didn't know who said, it gives us 37-year-olds who were married for a short time confident that we can still find our prince.
Okay. Yeah, but you also have to consider who walked her down the aisle. What kind of confidence does that give you? I'm just asking questions.
I know. I just...
The
things that... look, people, you can get your entertainment however you wish.
Sure.
Arguing the royal wedding is like arguing music.
Exactly.
You can't do it.
Right.
People like what they like and are entertained by what they're entertained by.
Right.
And so if I can't say something nice, I've never done that before in anything else. If I can't say something nice on the royal wedding, I'm just not going to say anything at all.
Well, my youngest daughter, there are three things she's really interested in. Number one, Jurassic Park. Number two, Star Wars. And number three, not the royal family. Queen Elizabeth, because her first name is Elizabeth, so she follows Queen Elizabeth, right? And just in a lighthearted kind of way. And so there was a replay of it, I guess. I don't think they DVR'd it out in the living room.
Yeah,
those other people that live in
my... Yes.
And so it was apparently being repeated, I guess, yeah. And one of my granddaughters walks in and says, "Hey, can I hang out with you?" I was in the other side of the house. I said, "Well, sure." And I paused the movie I was watching. It was not for children. And she said, I said, "Here, I'll pause this movie because it's not something you can watch. It's a new murder mystery TV thing on Amazon and clearly wasn't for children." So I paused and I said, "I'll just turn this off and I can watch it later." She goes, "Well, I'm glad somebody is considering me." I said, "Well, what do you mean? What's going on the other side of the house?" She says, "They're watching The Royal Wedding." Okay. I said, you're not interested? She said, no. She said, Nana's cooking, and Elizabeth and others are watching the royal wedding in the living room. And I was like, okay, all right, that's fine.
Let me see here. Al Sharpton, royal wedding proves white male supremacy is on its last breath.
Why is that? How does it prove that?
Al Sharpton, who carved out a very, speaking at a rally on Saturday, put on by his National Action Network, Sharpton took the lovely union of two people in love to say that the royal wedding is proof that white male supremacy is coming to an end. When you've got little white girls in Wales saying, I want to be like Meghan, there's a shift worldwide that white male supremacy is on its last breath.
Well, no, okay. Which?
Never,
okay.
Never mind. That's it right here in bizpackreview.com.
Never mind that he's the prince.
Never mind that the myth of the white male supremacy is a liberal construct from the racial grievances industry that has
of course
little application in the real world.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But that didn't stop the so-called reverend from using the occasion to praise the family of the left's messiah, Barack Obama, while getting in a prerequisite shot at President Donald Trump. When you have little white girls in Arkansas look up and say, I want to be beautiful and smart like Michelle Obama. I want to dress like the Obama girl, Sharpton said. That's where the white supremacy is questioned.
All right.
White parents in their living room say, we've got to do something. And
they do?
And that's where Trump played on. We're losing control of our own children. Wow.
He's just making it up as he goes along. Yeah, wait a minute. Really it's Al Sharpton. Yeah, of course he is. Yeah.
I did see that about, Meghan Markle, which, by the way, I had no idea the race of her parents until it was pounded at me this weekend because I didn't care.
Yeah, I still don't know. I only saw a picture of her father because he was in the news. So she's of a mixed race?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I didn't know.
Okay.
You know why I didn't know? Because I didn't care.
I just learned it.
I thought that's where we were supposed to get to, where we didn't care, where it didn't matter.
Right.
Where you just went, well, I don't really care what her mother or father is.
It doesn't
matter to me. Mm-mm. Isn't that where we're supposed to be? Remember the whole Starbucks thing?
Mm-hmm.
When Schultz came out and said, people don't even know the races of their people in their own on their own streets.
Right.
I went, well, yeah, because I don't care.
Doesn't matter. They're my neighbors, all of them. So
right. I mean, the whole point was, and this is really you want to. The left is the one that is obsessed with people's skin color.
Mm-hmm.
They are obsessed with it. And why are you obsessed with it? And why do you judge that this is such a big matter to everybody? Because you care about it.
Yep.
I don't care about race.
And this is the continuation of something that's been going on for a long time, two, three, four generations at least, in trying to separate everybody.
Yep.
That's Al Sharpton right there is separating people, not bringing people together. He disguises it as a moment of bringing people together, and that's false. It's not. It just isn't.
Right. I'll never forget when Schultz said that about Starbucks. Most people don't even know the races of their people on the street. Well, that's where I thought the left wanted us to go. This is a long time ago, not mm-hmm. now, but a long time ago, where you didn't care about the person's skin color, just the content of their character.
Right.
When he said that, I remember stating on the air, I have no idea. Huh. I have never looked at the race of people on my street
mm-hmm.
because I didn't care.
Right.
But just for Howard, I did, and I found out I'm a minority on my street.
Mm. Well, it is... What's interesting is that it implies that actually he points out he kind of defeats his own point. If it's true we don't care, that means we're not what? Taking notice of it before we move to that neighborhood or on that block, right? which means we don't care about it.
Right.
We don't.
Right. I don't.
I don't care. I didn't go door to door to check before I bought my current home.
Right. I thought the whole point was not to care about color of skin, where it doesn't even matter anymore, where you judge people as individuals. And so I was like, you know, Meghan Markle's makeup, I don't care.
No.
I don't care about anybody's color of their skin. I just don't care.
The most I know about her is that she got married on Saturday.
Yes, that's the only thing I... And
good for her. That's fine and dandy. Good for Prince Harry. Fine and dandy. The best to both of them. None of that would have played into the equation of me, this is the falsehood. That white parents are sitting around going, we've got to do something to control our children, which is to imply we got to keep them from thinking like this.
Right.
We got to keep them from looking up to women of color. That's ridiculous. It's moronic.
And that's...
Al Sharpton.
Well, of course it is. As we've said, the liberal black leadership in this country is obsessed with race and obsessed with skin color. They're the ones who constantly preach that the color of your skin is important.
Yep.
And you should focus on the color of your skin. And we say, actually not. You should focus on the content of somebody's character.
Mm-hmm.
The skin color is meaningless.
Right.
Personally, I judge people by their eye color.
Hmm. Yeah.
I think blue-eyed people,
mm-hmm.
which I just happen to be, we are genetically superior because mm-hmm. of our blue eyes.
Right. Actually, it's been proven that green-eyed people are. I think it's science or something. I don't know who proved it.
Oh, is it
somebody smart?
Somebody said that came out to study the green-eyed people?
I don't know. I'm just making it up.
Somebody I respect once told me that people with brown eyes are insane.
Oh, yeah, I told you that. Wait a minute. Is our mic on right now? But only certain people.
Somebody who I used to respect.
Only certain people.
I judge people by their eye color.
Like my crazy friend who has brown eyes.
Oh, I did see, though. You know, some people judge people by hair colors. I did see just the headline a couple of weeks ago. It just popped into my mind that women that have red hair are smarter.
Yeah, I know quite a few redheads. I've got several of them in my family. I would say, I don't know, smarter than what? Than me?
So
yeah.
So Kathy Griffin is superior to us?
Yeah, not sure.
Also coming up on the show, the spy who wasn't spying. Meanwhile, the Justice Department to look at the spine of the Trump campaign,
mm-hmm.
even though we're being told the spy wasn't a spy.
Yes. Not a spy.
The spy.
But it's okay if they were spying because it was just an investigation, but not a spy.
There were two explanations. The spy wasn't a spy because mm-hmm. the spy was trying to help out the Trump campaign.
You're
that
right.
was one that I saw over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, the spy wasn't a spy because the spy was actually just an investigator investigating Russian collusion. So was not a spy, but an investigator.
Right.
Like, my God. So we will get to that. By the way, a monumental moment in American history.
The royal wedding?
No.
Oh.
No. Well, 1776.
Did you see ABC put that down? This terrific moment in history.
No.
Okay.
Actually, would be the, you know, that it might have been overshadowed, but the fact that there was a spy.
Mm.
That was put in, you know, by, you know, and we've got so much to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a spy in the Trump campaign that was put in by, in essence, the opposition.
Right.
And you think about how huge that is in the history of American politics. And I know the mainstream media is trying to downplay it, but it is just huge. We'll get to that here in just a little bit. The school shooting and the response to it. Are the Hollywood elite who preach on gun control just expressing their white privilege? See the confusion in liberalism again.
Mm-hmm.
Rudy says Mueller may be done by September 1st if... You might want to be quiet on that. Starbucks, by the way, officially announces their bathroom policy over the weekend. I think it was Saturday.
Oh.
Where they officially announced anybody can use it. Anybody can come in whether you buy anything or not.
Okay.
So, bring in a tent.
Yeah. It's and they're going to write this on the cup. Feel free to pee.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I like that. 866, we got a great show ahead, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls, 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Thanks so much for being here this morning. So, yeah, the big story is the New York Times. FBI used informant to investigate Russia ties to campaign, not to spy, as Trump claims.
Oh, okay.
New York Times article.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, after the Hamas... after the media blowing the Hamas story last week, what was the other one they blew?
Later in the week, it was the second one was. Hold on a second, I'll think of it in just a second. But they got it totally wrong.
Yeah, there were two stories that they blew, and so when I get to this, when I woke up yesterday morning and saw that one. The FBI used informant to investigate Russia ties to campaign, not to spy, as Trump claims.
Right.
Well, Wall Street Journal talked about that. Well, as our readers continue to parse that distinction.
Well, it's going to go back to, okay, the beginning of that investigation has changed, what, now three times? So the question is, when did it begin and why? That's really the question. What was the basis for the investigation?
Yep.
And you'll know then in that case, that will tell us, in part, it will tell us why that spy was in place.
And apparently that means that Michael Horowitz, the Inspector General in the Justice Department, will now be investigating the informant slash spy,
right?
Because that was announced. Rosenstein announced that last night or yesterday,
right?
That that was going to happen after the president came out and demanded that an investigation be done to find out if a spy was put into the Trump campaign and was in any way authorized by anybody in the Obama administration,
right? And that's again, it would have to be. Then you're going to have to look at, okay, what was the investigation about? What would justify putting a spy in a campaign? Where did that begin? You have to go back. Before you can know who's guilty of what, you have to go back to the very beginning. And the beginning of this investigation has changed multiple times. It's time to find out the truth. For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
You may recall last Monday I had mentioned that for the week ahead we would see 3 to 5 inches of rain for locations in the northeast, east, and south. And we're going to repeat that forecast for the week ahead. Another 3 to 5, possibly 6 inches of rain for many of those areas that saw that amount last week. We'll also see the central plains of Nebraska and Kansas stay wet this week with upwards of 4 to 5 inches of rain. The dry areas continue to be most of California, the desert southwest, and Texas without a lot of rain for the week ahead. Surprisingly, there has been a lot of progress this week in corn planting. Of the 18 states that report, 62% of the corn crop is planted. The average for this time of year, 63%. Temperatures today, 90s in the desert southwest and southern plains, 80s on the eastern seaboard, 92 in Vegas, 70s for the west coast, 58 in Chicago. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. Yes, the other story was the MS-13 story.
Yep.
So what an embarrassment to the New York Times. Not really a spy. Was there to investigate. Yeah, blah, 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 blah.
undeniably irrefutable. Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. Really, you think about how incredible it really is. You know, everything that we have talked about, you know, from the very beginning, even before we got to the, you know, the whole spy slash informant slash investigator portion of this, we had said, you know, quite a while ago that when you look at the history books, it'll be interesting to see how the history books look at this. And as we've said all along, and we don't even know the entire story yet, but just what we know so far, that the Democrats in the 2016 election accused the Republican candidate and his campaign of colluding with the Russians, first to hack the election and then to change the outcome of the election. Once they couldn't prove, once there was no evidence that there was any hacking in the election, you couldn't go there. So to change the outcome of the election. And what you find out a year later is it is that same, the Democrats that were in power had the executive branch, that actually they were the ones, and that their Democratic National Committee, their campaign, and their law enforcement, which is the FBI and the Department of Justice in the executive branch, that first it was the DNC and the Hillary campaign that colluded with the Russians to attempt to change the outcome of the election. And now we know that it was the law enforcement arm of the Democrats who had the executive branch of President Obama who put a spy into the Trump campaign. And we are still awaiting whether the secret warrants that were issued, for Carter Page to monitor, Carter Page, what those were actually based on, and not the suspicion, but the fact that law enforcement did not tell the secret court who paid for it.
Right.
Specifically, who paid for it.
Right.
And when you really think about it, it's incredible. And then leading up to this, and I know we have the royal wedding and everything else, and so maybe in the context of the last 3 days that naming of Stefan Halper as the spy, the former Cambridge professor who apparently has, you know, been doing intelligence gathering for the FBI in the past. I mean, what, since all the way back to 1980?
Right.
Has been involved in some type of wrongdoing. And then you see everything that went that led up to this, the outcry from the Department of Justice, the FBI, the intelligence branches, as this guy's name can't get out, that this will put people's lives at risk. And then you see everything that was leaked, you know, to the friendly media over that period of time. I'm just going to read this here. I mean, the things that were leaked, and this is the Wall Street Journal before they became one of the media outlets that said, okay, we're going to, you know, put out his name. But they said, Justice and the FBI claim this Capitol Hill oversight would blow the cover of this non-spy and even endanger his life. Yet the same stories have disclosed so many specific details about the informant who we dare not call a spy that you can discover the name of the likeliest suspect in a single Google search. We now know, for example, that the informant is an American academic who teaches in Britain, who served in previous Republican administrations. He has worked as a longtime U.S. intelligence source for the FBI and the CIA. The stories provide the names of three Trump campaign officials who the informant sought to caught, as well as specific dates and details of the encounters. He met with Mr. Page at a symposium at the British University in mid-July, stayed in touch with him for more than a year. He met with Mr. Clovis at a hotel cafe in Crystal City, Virginia, on either August 31st or September 1st. The informant didn't previously know the three men, but offered to help with the campaign. He also threw money at Mr. Papadopoulos. My whole point was, they said, we can't release the name, yet somebody friendly to the Justice Department leaked out so much information that you were able to figure out, as many were able to figure out before his name was even finally released by various media outlets on Friday and Saturday and Sunday, people knew who he was. It mm-hmm. was obvious. Mm-hmm. So everything that the FBI was telling us, everything that the intelligence sources were telling us, and we even mentioned this on Friday before we, you know, before his name was officially, you know, was released by the media, that they were lying to the American public.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time they were trying to keep it secret, it was being leaked. Has anybody seen the New York Times or the Washington Post being bashed by the Obama administration, by Adam Schiff, Democrats for releasing as much information as they did, where it was easy to find out who this spy slash informant was? Has anybody seen any criticism?
Because it was the leaks. And by the way, we know leaks either from the Justice Department or somebody very close to the Justice Department looking to defend the Justice Department here in these actions that leaked to the Times and the Post.
Well, where's the fury? There's been fury at Devin Nunes. Where's the fury at the New York Times and the Washington Post?
They're the ones that put all of this together. So you can't claim that anymore, that it's going to put lives at risk. You can't do that. Because it's very clear that was orchestrated. And by the way, one more in that line of events and leaks and everything else that did exactly that, including going back to Comey himself. He talked about protecting the integrity and the work of the agents that he left behind at the FBI. Really? By leaking, admittedly leaking a story to your professor friend so he could get it to the media? That's how you protect the integrity and the lives and the work of those agents in the field? It's bogus.
Well, it seems it doesn't seem like anybody is actually concerned about protecting sources or protecting lives or protecting methods. It seems like they're looking to protect their big posteriors mm-hmm. and cover their posteriors here at the moment. Because every time they tell us that this is about national secrets and this is about, not revealing sources and methods, we find out it's a bunch of bull.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a bunch of bull. And you could see this coming when the New York Times, this is a week old.
Yes.
Wait a minute, all this stuff's being leaked out right now where everybody sort of has a clue as to who this person is, and now you've got a bunch of media sources coming on saying, we know exactly who this person is. That's been over a week now because of the leaks to friendly media.
In fact, the Washington Post story was leaked 2 weeks from tomorrow, 2 weeks ago Tuesday.
Yep.
They put it together. The Wall Street Journal was able to put it together. Kimberly Strassel saying at that point, they put the pieces of the puzzle together.
Daily Caller put it together.
Because it was put out there so blatantly, whoever leaked it knew what they were doing. And it was, again, never going to be about protecting methods or protecting lives or anything like that. It was protecting themselves. They were trying to cover it up. They were trying to, this was trying to bury this thing before it got too big. Except you can't now because you have too many players. You have too many people that are following this too closely. And here we are. We knew it was going to be a matter of days before that name of that spy was released. And from that point on, then you can go back and this will lead us to the beginning of this investigation, how that person became a spy, why they were there, and what the mission was. That's all important.
And, when did he agree to do it?
Right.
What's the timeline on all of this, which I'm still not sure. I mean, there's a variety of different articles out there, and I don't know which one is more accurate. But what we do know is that the FBI was spying on the Trump campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of the FISA warrants, now we know that there was an FBI informant spying on the Trump campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. I know that, and I won't just say Trump supporters, you know, Mark Penn just, you know, going crazy over all of this. He's a former Clinton advisor. Mm. You know, Dershowitz going crazy over it. He didn't vote for Trump. Turley crazy over it. He didn't vote for Trump. And so, sure, you have Trump people, but you also have people that are concerned with the abuse of power in our government, the abuse of power in law enforcement. It's something that you and I have said. We had a call. Was it Friday? Somebody said, "Well, what if it's a Republican?" We said, "Who's the spy?" We said, "That doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. No, that's not part of the story at all.
It's who, if there was an abuse of power,
who's in power,
who's in power, and who in any position of authority was responsible for that abuse. That's the question. I mean, if you're talking about the dossier, that's one thing. The dossier, whether it was, you know, filled with bogus information or true information, if we're talking about opposition research, that in and of itself is nothing out of the ordinary and is not unlawful. The unlawful part potentially is if someone in any position of power ordered everything that led up to the FISA warrants or the spy being put in place by the FBI in the Trump campaign.
I guess my question for many Democrats would be, are you okay with this as long as it's Trump?
Right.
Is an abuse of power okay when it's Donald Trump that you're going after?
Mm-hmm.
And why? That right. would be my question to any Democrat out there, because on social media, very, very, very quiet over the weekend.
Right. Well, and there were a couple of things. New York Magazine did a thing on the spy and this whole theory of a spy, and I'm trying to find that story again. But their point was, well, see, there's one little flaw. If they were using that, let's say the Democrats were using that against Trump in hopes of using it as an October surprise, they never used it. Well, A, actually, that premise is wrong because you're assuming they believed they needed to. Remember, the day before the election, on that Monday before the election, 95% chance she's going to win. There's no doubt she's going to win. So if you've done something that is illegal, that you know you couldn't get away with, the last thing you want to do is reveal that if you don't need it. So if they felt that they didn't need it, if the numbers were not in his favor, if they believed their own internals or whatever it was that was showing that she was going to win, then you don't need an October surprise. So then you go to post-election. Oh, crap, he won. And now you've got to take it to a whole new level. Well, look what we have here. Let's go undermine the legitimacy of this presidency or this election by pulling out all of this bogus stuff that we did along the way. Again, this whole theory. If that's what was going on here, you don't necessarily need to pull an October surprise in order to do that. You're doing it, as Strzok said, as a insurance policy. You don't always use your insurance policy, especially when you don't have a claim. If they felt they didn't need it, they wouldn't have pulled an October surprise, and they didn't.
That's a good point. You only need insurance
when you have a claim.
When you have
a real reason to use that.
Yes, exactly.
When you have, otherwise, you keep paying for it, right? In this case, this was their insurance policy. The storm didn't hit until Election Day.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up on the top of the hour, the Texas mass shooting that happened on Friday and the response to it, and some of the interesting narrative that's coming out of this shooting that we will get to, plus more audio cuts from a variety of different people out there. It's interesting because you had mentioned that Devin Nunes and also I can't think of his name, Sam Nunberg. I was just listening to one audio cut you were playing here during the top of the hour, or during the break there, Eric, where he was talking about the fact that he's heard that there were multiple stings going on
right
inside, and Devin Nunes sort of referred to that, but that was even before the spy's name was the informant's name was
midweek. He said something to the effect, at least one spy.
But by the way, I mean, there's, we already got people calling, you know, that some Republicans on the Sunday morning news shows called him a you know, an informant. Look, informant, spy, whatever, but he was spying. That's what he was doing.
Yeah.
The New York Times trying to make the parse the investigation versus spy. This was spying on the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
You can be an informant and still spy. So let's get the, I don't want to get into the wordsmith stuff here with callers coming up.
Right. The question is, why was he there? Based on what?
He was there to spy. You can call him an informant. You can call him a spy. But he was there to spy.
Yep.
That's why. So just get that out of the way now.
Right.
But that's the interesting one, that multiple stings were being done now is starting to come out. Where does this go?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome. Thanks for being here this morning.
Ceasefire on the trade war.
I just told you. I'm just doing some reading on the whole thing with NAFTA and also with China. Did you see that the one thing that the U.S. Trade Representative wants? They want Mexico to pay $16 an hour to all their factory workers, and Mexico said that's not happening.
Well, there's no way that's happening.
That blew my mind when I read that over the weekend. I went, what? The United States is demanding that Mexico pay all their workers $16 an hour. And I'm like, oh, you mean more than American workers?
No, exactly. Everybody in California, wait a minute. We're just getting $15 an hour.
And they said it's one of the things holding up that, you know, one of the things that is holding up NAFTA. I believe I read that in the Wall Street Journal. Mm-hmm. I hadn't heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
And on the whole China thing, trying to figure out, I mean, how do you do a trade deal where you say, all right, China, you're going to cut your trade deficit by $200 billion?
Yeah. And
how?
And we're looking to help you bring some jobs back.
Right. It's just
at ZTE.
Right now, I cannot. I have read so many different articles on the trade negotiations, and unless you're involved in them, who knows? But I have no idea where they're going. It looks like, though, NAFTA isn't going to be done this year.
No, they won't get that done.
NAFTA won't be done this year, especially if they're trying to hold, you know, to the fact of Mexico must pay their factory worker $16 an hour.
I would love for many of the nations to be able to get their economy to the point that it would dictate and require those companies to pay higher wages. Because when we start seeing that, when the waters rise, they rise for everyone, and it becomes a stronger situation for the U.S., but it also becomes a better situation in terms of illegal immigration and everything else. So that's a great goal to have. Are we going to see that in our lifetime, $16 an hour, as a matter of free market principles in Mexico? The answer is no, and furthermore, no. And just a side note, no.
No,
it's not going to happen. You would want that, but it's not going to happen. You can't tell them. They're going to have to, because here's my question. Is Mexico going to come back and go, okay, raise your national minimum wage, your federal minimum wage, to $16 an hour?
People would be horrified if Mexico was dictating what we paid in our a trade negotiation.
They're going to say you should walk the walk, right? The U.S. should raise federal minimum. Now, I'm not saying there aren't people that want to do that. They actually, the liberals are pushing for that, so that they can essentially make the areas and states where they've raised federal minimum wage, or I'm sorry, their minimum wage to $15 an hour. If you raise the federal minimum wage, well, then everybody hurts. as much as their areas are hurting. That's not, but that's not going to happen, nor do we want it to happen.
Well, then here's the thing. Then if they know they're not going to get it done by the end of the year, I remember, was it you telling me last week that that and I did read it over the weekend too, but I think you also told me this late last week, the push to get Congress to stay in session all summer long.
Yeah, in fact, there's in the Senate, they were saying it's a big push in the Senate right now. The Republicans telling, you know, leadership, look, we can't take an August break. And it was interesting because I was thinking, well, we're only in May. Why are they talking about the August break? Because they made the valid point. With all the confirmations that are on the table that need to be, you know, done, and the other legislation that they say they want to get done, this is, in case, and they're crossing their fingers, I mean, this, the Senate is where that slim margin is and where that turn could happen in terms of that big blue wave. It may not be a big blue wave, but the Democrats, if they win the Senate, then, of course, a lot of that stuff is going to go away. That's on the table for them. So they're saying, if we worked right now through the weekend and worked late every day and through the August break, we'd still have trouble getting time, getting everything done in time. And we want to get that done by the end of the year. So we'll see if they actually, you know, agree to do that. But it's been pushed by a number of Republicans.
So here would be my question now on NAFTA and dealing with the Chinese. So let's say you can't. It was supposed to be done, what, by last Thursday?
Right, right.
Otherwise, they said they don't see the timeline of getting it done this year. Mm-hmm. Now, they claim that if they stay in session, they still have a few more weeks to get this done. Who knows whether that will happen. But from what I've read, on the, they're not close.
Right, right.
They're not close on NAFTA.
Right, yeah.
So if they're not close on NAFTA, does the president come out and say, okay, NAFTA ends in 6 months? Mm-hmm. Which would be what? Right coming up to the election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that going to happen and have the possibility of the stock market crashing when you say that? And then at the same time say, well, we can't get a deal done with the Chinese, even though they claim there's a tentative one to look forward to it. And that's was saw Larry Kudlow over the weekend, you know, talking about that. But if they don't get what they want, the threat of tariffs on more China goods, too, leading into a midterm election, that has to be terrifying some of the Republican leadership right now,
right,
not knowing what this administration might do when it comes to trade, because that has been one of their strongest talking points. Mm-hmm. Not to say that, you know, that the free traders, by the addition of Larry Kudlow, you know, as the president's lead economic guy, but remember, he's not the lead trade guy. The lead trade guy and the lead economic guy have two separate opinions on what to do in the Trump administration. Mm. But if Kudlow comes aboard, as we said, that's like, you know, putting me on the staff. You know, does that show that, well, then it just will be status quo? That the status
with no change.
we just keep working on the agreements. Mm. We've got to get them better yet, but you don't make any decision on it. You just, because that, you can do that. We don't have to change NAFTA tomorrow or in 6 months, or say we're out of it in 6 months.
Right.
We don't have to do, the administration doesn't have to do any of that. You can just still continue to negotiate from now until the end of time a new NAFTA agreement.
Well, and it fits right into this president's wheelhouse. He's you know, especially with his base, he's nothing if not a constant negotiator, right? And so he can actually, politically, this particular president can get away with that where many could not. Now, you know, at some point, he's going to have to have, I think, something to show for it. But the question is, how much will he have to have? You know, if he walks away with a couple of small items in NAFTA changed, will that be enough politically for him? And with China on intellectual property issues, if they get away with, will they get away with fixing that? They would, I think, with a lot of his base. I don't know. I can't quantify.
Well, remember, the positive is, and I do this all looking at, you know, where we are right now, is the poll over the weekend that showed that 2/3 of Americans credit the president for the economy.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that means you're in charge now.
Well, you
if
own
it goes
it.
Up,
yours.
If it goes up, you own it.
Yep.
It shows you own it now, because people are saying, okay, you get the credit.
Right.
If it goes in the opposite direction, then you get the blame. nobody apparently in that poll, nobody really paid attention to, well, what's her name, the former Obama advisor? Can't think of her name right
Evelyn
now.
Evelyn Farkas?
No. His White House advisor. Oh, I just can't think of her name.
Valerie Jarrett,
who came out and said, this is the Obama economy that we're now seeing. Apparently, nobody in that poll bought that one. Evelyn Farkas. I love that, because I always forget her name.
Exactly. That's the first one.
Valerie Jarrett, who said, this is the Obama economy now starting to crank in.
Yeah,
apparently,
sure.
Apparently, the majority of the country doesn't believe that.
Right.
On trade, it's fascinating where it's going to go. And again, it's fascinating because of the president's campaign rhetoric and even rhetoric over the last 6 months on where he wants to go with trade. But again, they've been talking as if, okay, there's just, they've got a good basis for NAFTA. But from what was written late last week, they're not close. It's not, it's not something that they can get done this week or next week. And so if this thing goes into 2019, well, look, it's dead if the Republicans lose Congress. But then again, if the economy keeps doing good and people believe the economy is doing good, does it matter whether NAFTA gets passed now or in 2019? And if the economy is good, you have a better chance of winning in November.
Right.
But the president's been pretty quiet on the fact that NAFTA, that the deadline really was, last Thursday or Friday, I think it was, that they were trying to get to. The president's been very quiet on that.
Yeah.
You haven't heard a lot of tweeting whatsoever on it, so maybe that's part of the, hopefully that's part of the negotiation ploy. Okay, let's see where we go. But when I saw the fact of that the U.S. demand that Mexican factory workers must pay $16 an hour, the Mexicans aren't going to sign a free trade agreement that destroys their labor market.
No.
Or destroys any advantage they have with the United States.
No, they're not. Because if you're talking about that trade and the things that they're making, that would be, of course, what? That would increase the price drastically of the products they're manufacturing. And part of the reason that we do trade with other nations is because there are things that we can get cheap from them.
Cheaper, right.
We're better at some things. They're better at pricing. On a lot of things.
Not on everything, but
on a lot of things. And so when you look at the dynamics in that trade agreement, there are a number of things, a handful of things you and I have talked about over the years, but there's always going to be, and again, I think this is where this president gets away with it, there's always going to be room for negotiation to try and get a better deal. I think what's going on right now with China and intellectual property is something that has to be fixed. There are a couple of things that you and I have pointed out over the years, cross-border trucking or whatever it may be in relation to NAFTA, that we definitely need to fix as well. But, we'll see what they get done.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on inspections. Catching mechanical defects before they become a bigger problem or result in a roadside inspection violation starts with a thorough post-trip vehicle inspection. After operating a vehicle for the day, a vehicle inspection must be performed. When a property-carrying driver finds a vehicle defect, a written daily vehicle inspection report, or DVIR, must be prepared and signed by the driver. DVIRs noting defects that could affect safety or result in a breakdown must be signed by the person who made or oversaw the repairs, such as a mechanic or driver. The next driver of the vehicle reviews the report and signs the report to indicate repairs were made. This tip brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us on jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We've got some great audio coming up following the bottom of the hour about the spy.
Right. Yeah.
And just really how incredible it is. And that's one thing over the weekend. I had a couple of conversations with some folks and family and friends, and they were asking me about it. And I said, well, this is huge. This is one of the biggest. This is one of the most important stories, I think, in American history, you know, when it comes to the scandal that exists right now. Mm-hmm. and how you have such a significant portion of the bureaucracy. Some people call it deep state, the bureaucracy, the entrenched law enforcement bureaucracy that exists. But when you look at, because that's really where it gets to. When you look at, we have talked about the fact of the Democratic Party and the Hillary campaign colluding with the Russians in order to get information on Donald Trump in an attempt to destroy his campaign, and once he became a president, to destroy his campaign. But that's not really the problem. You may have some election, you know, money violations in there, but you can go to the French and get dirt on Trump if you want. You can go to the French and get dirt on Hillary or whoever's going to run in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing really illegal about it, but remember, that was the charge from Democrats against Republicans,
right?
Which is why we bring it up, because what they were claiming the Republicans did was exactly what they had done. The problem gets into when you have the official government get involved in the secret warrant business and not follow the rules and the law, and the probability that they didn't do that. When you get into spying on campaign, when you get into the fact of trying to get a secret warrant in order to spy on an opposition's campaign, when you start unmasking people, one administration and the political party and the executive branch power attempting to do it against the opposition party that's trying to get executive power. And then when you see law enforcement, when you see, and we're going to know pretty soon here in the next few weeks about the Hillary campaign, because remember, the whole Hillary server thing was going on right around the same time that they were looking at Donald Trump. But if you look at the fact that the FBI put a spy into the Trump campaign, this is huge.
Yeah, it's pretty massive. And now kind of focusing on what Devin Nunes said last week, where he said at least one spy. Then over the weekend, in one interview, he was asked if there could be multiple spies. Well, that's something that Sam Nunberg also touched on it over the weekend. And Devin Nunes said it's possible. That's what he has said. So if that's possible, he's also said he's interested in no more meetings with the Department of Justice until all those documents are handed over. So that's what he should insist on. The oversight committees have that authority. They should look at that situation. We have to get to the bottom of this, and you can't even – this entire investigation is about where it started, where – how far back does this go, and what was the purpose of having an FBI or more than one FBI spies in the Trump campaign? And did they place people, were they looking to place people in other campaigns during the primary? I mean, how far back does this go? That's the question.
And what was the legal justification for doing
so? Right.
Because if you've got the legal justification, there shouldn't be any secrets.
Right.
Nobody should have been fighting to release this information about the spy in the Trump campaign.
Because it would start, I would believe, it would start by, if you're defending this, if you're at the top of the Justice Department here, or someone that was in the past, you're saying, well, we had information on the Russians, and we believed it because of these events. We believed it because of these communications. It's a very simple question. It's, where did this all begin and why? You don't have to justify. You don't have to do anything. But there's all this stonewalling. Why is it that the beginning, the genesis of the investigation on the Trump campaign, has changed in the narrative multiple times? Why would it change?
Yeah.
Because, and keep
you
in mind.
You either know what it is or you don't.
Well, exactly. Because that's important.
Legally. You,
right.
You, legally, you're supposed to know exactly why and when a campaign began or an investigation began.
Right. Because
precisely.
If all the leaks have looked to hurt the Trump campaign or presidency, all of the leaks have looked to damage this president. Well, if you had justification for the genesis, for the very beginning, the reason for this investigation, that certainly would be damaging,
or,
if you could say.
Or soften the blows to the Department of Justice and FBI.
Well, yeah. Well, right. Up until recently, that's what began, yes.
Right.
But up until then, it was about damaging the president.
Yep.
Well, give us the reason why this all began. That shouldn't be so hard.
Do-gooder tough guys, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And I'm Gary, he's Eric. Welcome. You ready for this audio cut? This is Tucker Carlson from Friday night with Kim Strassel.
All right.
This is after James Clapper said, well, no, I mean, they were investigating Russian collusion. It's a good thing that there was a spy inside the Trump campaign.
Yeah, right.
Let's get to this, though, because this gets to be a little bit just from bizarro world.
Former Obama intelligence director Jim Clapper says that if the Trump campaign was spied on, that's a good thing. Watch this.
The focus here, and as it was with the intelligence community, is not on the campaign per se, but what the Russians were doing to try to instantiate themselves in the campaign or to influence or leverage it. So if there was someone that was observing that sort of thing, well, that's a good thing, because the Russians pose a threat to the very basis of our political system.
Kim Strassel is on the board of the Wall Street Journal editorial page, and she joins us tonight. Kim, so you just heard Jim Clapper tell us it's a good thing. Do you think it'd be worth just putting a permanent FBI or CIA spy in every presidential campaign going forward?
Why not? It sounds like it would be a good thing, Tucker. I mean, look, you and I have been doing this for a long time. Can you think of any time in history when this has happened or when anyone thought it was okay for? By the way, the Department of Justice is being run by one political party, surveilling, electronically surveilling, and then also spying on the leading candidate and for a nominee for the opposing party running for the presidency.
It's almost too big to get your head around. And you've got to think that in any other moment, in the last 50 years, if this came to light, it would be considered a stop the presses moment. It would be a legitimate constitutional crisis and a scandal. People would go to prison. And yet this is passing almost without comment, except really on this channel and you're at your newspaper. Why?
Well, the mainstream media doesn't want to have to put this the way it is because they still want the Russia collusion narrative to be true. They still want a pretext to get this president out of office. And so people are no longer using standard measures. Look, I'm a libertarian. I don't want a government spying on anybody in any situation that's illegitimate. And so I try to put that same measure out there. But one other thing, too, that I think is so astounding and that also deserves some note is the games that the Department of Justice is playing in terms of coming clean with this information. They have now flouted a subpoena from Chairman Nunes for weeks, saying that there's no way they can give him the information he wants because it might put this source of theirs at risk. And yet they have, over the past couple weeks, leaked more information about this person than was prior known and would be known. And they're doing it all in order to get friendly media to write stories about how they did everything right in 2016, which, of course, we know they didn't.
Because that's what it is now. I mean, you see the talking points. Well, it's a good thing. Well, it wasn't a spy. This is because, well, no, because if there's Russian collusion, and you're simply investigating it, you go to the political party and you ask them, you say, You know, number one, there would be a complaint because remember, the RNC turned over their servers to the FBI.
Yep.
The DNC did not.
Yep.
And so the RNC was willing to cooperate. So, of course, they already said, hey, FBI, come on in, look at our servers. Mm-hmm. If the Russians are trying to get involved in it, you know, we want you to be a part of it. So
right.
Why did you need a spy and not tell them?
Right.
But Clapper, it's beautiful because that's the mentality that you get from a James Clapper. Remember, Clapper is the person who lied to Congress when he was asked specifically whether they were collecting data on Americans. And he said no. He lied mm-hmm. under oath.
Mm-hmm.
Was never prosecuted for it.
No.
I believe he should have been. He just said he misremembered.
Yeah, right.
And this was when it came to the fact that the NSA was collecting the metadata on all Americans from their cell phones. That question he couldn't get right.
Yeah, something that massive he couldn't remember.
And so to me, this is perfectly in line with his mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine to have a spy. It's fine to have somebody inside of a campaign because,
sure.
You know, there's a lot of threats out there and the Russians are a threat. And so, yeah, it's okay. That's the narrative that they're attempting to throw at you. Look
right.
at this. New York Times, FBI used informant to investigate Russia ties in campaign, not to spy as Trump claims. That's the New York Times. Exact same thing that Clapper is saying. The talking points are now out.
Yes. It's a good thing. And I think, you know, Tucker Carlson there in that exchange asked a great question. Well, shouldn't we do it all the time then? Shouldn't we have, isn't it okay that the FBI, that any federal agency should have informants or spies in all the campaigns? If this had happened under the Bush years, during the Bush years, while Obama was running for office, can you imagine?
Oh my!
In 2008, had this come out?
You know, as said, you know, it's you know, I remember Watergate,
mm-hmm.
and I remember how big it was, and I remember how all America was shocked by it, and knowing that this name was going to be released, you know, over really was it almost 2 weeks?
Right.
We knew. We said, okay, this. Stefan Halper's name, we knew that his name would eventually, you know, come out, whoever the spy was,
mm-hmm.
because they kept leaking information on it.
Right.
And it was said, they keep leaking more information where everybody can figure it out, and finally they did figure it out, and for 3 or 4 days everybody said, we know who this person is,
mm-hmm.
and then finally it came out. And so you have, not only do you have a government and a Justice Department and an FBI that over the last couple of years have done things that are very highly suspicious, some criminal. And not only now do we find out that they had a spy in the opposing campaign's campaign, we also know about the fact that they were not honest, fully honest, in their FISA warrant to get a secret warrant. These are things that at any other time in history, the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal would be going crazy over the abuse of power by government.
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing? Look at that right there. Giving excuses. Buying into the talking points that are coming from those that have no problem, apparently, with the abuse of power by government as long as it's against candidates that they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
That is, to me, that is unbelievable that we have gotten to that point in this country. Think about it. Remember all the president's men. What was that about? It was about a break-in into the DNC to tap into their, to wiretap them. That's what it was.
We could go back. We could identify the initial crime.
We could identify the initial crime.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess my point is we cannot, you know, that was the crime there. But now you have not, I'm not talking about the Trump collusion portion of it.
Right.
I'm talking about what the FBI, what we know that they've already done in the Department of Justice. We know about the FISA warrant process. We know what they didn't do. We know why they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there was an active movement to spy on the Trump campaign, and nobody can identify what the specific crime, as you just said, nobody can identify what the specific crime is. This is something that would have driven the the Washington Post and the New York Times crazy at any other time in history. Now they are supporting those who have done that and seem to have no interest or no journalistic inquisitive nature to find out specifically what happened.
If this FBI spy was in place for a legitimate reason, why wasn't that part of the initial leaks? Why wasn't that one of the first things leaked? Because you would want to, again, justify, just like we said, if you're standing in front of a FISA court judge, not only do you hide the source of that dossier, you go out and you're trying to make the point to that FISA judge in petitioning for that warrant that this is real information, it's credible information, and here's how we got it, here's how we know. We want to build that, for the judge, that credibility in place. So as all of these stories began to leak to the friendly media, over all this time, one of the last things we find out is about the FBI spy?
Mm-hmm.
If it's legitimate, why didn't we find that out initially? Even if they didn't point directly to the FBI spy, this would be intelligence information where they would say, this is where it began, and that narrative would never change. Instead, what do we have? We have a narrative that has changed multiple times. It's Carter Page. Oh, it was Papadopoulos. Oh, it was... And pick your, again, pick your story, pick your narrative. It starts to change every single time. Now we go back. Now we know of the FBI spy, and now they're not denying that. They're trying to justify the FBI spy being there. Well, it still begs the question, where did it all begin?
What was the crime?
What was the FBI looking at? Where were they saying, these things happened, these communications happened, this builds, these events or communications build in our mind a conspiracy to make something illegal happen? Where is it? Of all the things that have been leaked, where is that? That would be the justification, because that would be where you would have a news organization like the Times or the Post. They would be able to stand on solid ground in their claims. I'm not saying the claims would hold. I'm just saying they certainly wouldn't be standing on something whose narrative has changed multiple times.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Red Eye Radio, 866-90 Red Eye. I just read the transcript of Senator Warner on, where was he? He was on Face the Nation today.
Mm-hmm.
He really didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
I just went through the entire, you were talking about that to me earlier during the break, and we're trying to look at how Democrats are, you know, are looking at this, except for the fact that, you know, we shouldn't reveal classified information about the identity of an FBI or CIA source, and that's against the law.
Yeah, Trump associates who leaked classified information should be prosecuted. Does that include Comey?
Yeah. And they talking about sources and methods and all that, blah, 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 blah. Well, we know that, you know, that has gone nowhere. Then I would believe that somebody is looking to go after the New York Times and those leaks to the Washington Post,
right,
that really made it so you gave enough information in order to out this confidential FBI source. So let the prosecutions begin.
Yeah, and Warner believes that he finds it hard to believe that the FBI would put someone there purely for political purposes. But he has no trouble believing the whole collusion thing with zero evidence. You know, but that's typical here. And what you see as you'll follow this out, because now that the story has gone wide, now that it's more than just, the Post leaking the friendly version, another New York Times trying to leak a friendly version that, by the way, would, you know, be friendly to anybody who's trying to protect the actions of any wrongdoers at the Department of Justice. And then you have the Wall Street Journal. Those were limited, but now everybody is on this story, and primarily because when Halper's name came out and then the president tweeting over the weekend about the Department of Justice looking into this, and then their statement saying, okay, you know, essentially, you know, our watchdog is going to look into this and determine whether or not any wrongdoing was done. Well, that now sets up the media for defense. And you brought that story, Gary, from the Times. If that's just look at how they word the defense of these actions, you know, in defense of these actions, the FBI putting somebody, you know, in place on the Trump campaign. Again, if that had been somebody in the 2008 campaign, if that had been somebody, the FBI putting somebody in the Obama campaign, no.
Wow.
No. The liberal media would have gone crazy. And by the way, I would have too, if we found out that it was purely for political purposes. You and I would have been wholly against that. The point is that look at them defending it here. The question is, who was responsible for it? And we still don't have that answer. And why was the FBI informant or more than one person put in place? What were they there for? Where was the beginning of this investigation? The justification for all of this? Where did that begin?
And that's a question there for Democrats. Is it okay to spy without cause if it's a candidate you don't like?
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. I just have to play, you and I talked about last week, whether it was Gaza that the media made idiots of themselves or the whole MS-13 response that the president had, and they continued it. I want to play here. This is from Face the Nation, an editor from Slate magazine, and then we go to CNN. They just won't back down. You ready for this?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. All right, this is Face the Nation. Here we go.
Even in this particular case where he's responding to a hypothetical question about an MS-13 gang member, note his language. He doesn't talk specifically about MS-13 gang members. He talks specifically about these people, which is vague and a bit slippery, and it's unclear exactly what he means. But that...
Okay, it wasn't. He responded directly to the question about MS-13.
Yes.
And this is, again, this is absolutely intellectually dishonest.
Yes. It's a lie.
You want fake? Yes. This is lie. This is a lie from this Slate editor. Let's continue here. Okay.
That is in keeping with his past language. I think that when evaluating these kind of comments and evaluating this kind of imprecision, I'm not sure we should give the benefit of the doubt towards the president's only referring specifically to this one group of people. And having said that, even if that was the case, I do think there's a serious problem with the president dehumanizing any group of people in the United States, even if they are hardened criminals.
John, is it appropriate for a president to ever call anyone an animal, even if they are sadistic gang members?
Yeah, I think that's something to watch out for. The history of political leaders dehumanizing opponents, even criminals, and using animal metaphors is a dangerous one. That is.
In defense of MS-13. Wow. Former Mayor Willie Brown, you want to add some comments to that one?
That was, this is, by the way, the first gentleman was Slate's Jamel Bowie.
Yeah. This is exactly what's going on. This is part of the mentality very much alive in the party on the left. Hate to the point that he's worse than MS-13.
He shouldn't be dehumanizing.
Yes.
MS-13.
Well, even hardened criminals.
Uh-huh. I think most people would disagree with you on that.
Yes.
It's okay.
It is.
We have no problems with that whatsoever. Brutal, sadistic, murderous gang members. No problem calling them animals. Number one, we are all animals to begin with, but just to let you know what was happening, even after they made fools of themselves of it, still defending it. And I told you, I mean, that was the one thing that they were saying. Well, the president, it's the same as if I was asked the question, is Eric a nice guy? Mm-hmm. Somebody asked, is Eric a nice guy? Yeah, he's a really, really nice guy. I like him a lot. Well, what about Eric? Well, I just responded. Well, you didn't say his name. I didn't have to say his name. I directly responded to your question about Eric. That's what they're trying to play here on the president. That's what Jamel Bowie was trying to do from Slate magazine. It's childish. It's disingenuous. It's a lie. It's fake news.
And they make it worse by going out and then saying, and even if that were true.
Right.
And then start defending MS-13.
Wow. They just make it too easy. They really do when you think about it.
Well, I guess we knew that this was coming, though.
Well,
defending criminals and you know, the former president telling a group of Christians that they needed to get off their high horse after addressing ISIS. You need to get off your high horse when it comes to the terrorists in the world today over something, the Crusades, that happened hundreds and hundreds of years ago.
As we say to the left, keep it up.
Yeah.
Keep doing exactly what you're doing. We're going to make note of it, mm-hmm. and we'll call you on it and talk about the lies. Mm-hmm. Because if you watch that in the setting that it was at, talking to law enforcement and a specific question from a sheriff, you knew exactly what he was talking about.
Yeah. There's no doubt.
But they're still trying to defend it. That just boggles my mind. By the way, this is one here because we didn't get a chance to talk about the you know, some of the response to the Texas school shooting on Friday. This is something, now this would be a conundrum on the left. Campus Reform Editor-in-Chief Lawrence Jones hammered late-night host Jimmy Kimmel Sunday on Fox News for the white privilege he enjoys as a rich white man while wanting to disarm law-abiding Americans. Kimmel started off his Friday show by referencing the Texas shooting as another reason why politicians need to do something to gun control. He said, quote, so they sit there with their hands in their pockets, pockets that are full of gun money, and they do nothing. They just wait for the outrage to pass because it didn't happen to their children. The least you can do is register to vote right now. Make sure we vote for politicians who will do something. These kinds of things don't happen in countries with real sensible gun laws. Jones, however, sees the late night host, by the way, Jones is black, mm-hmm. as yet another example of white privilege. I've never seen a better example of white privilege than Jimmy Kimmel, said Jones. He's a white, rich man that has security, but he doesn't want other Americans to have security as well, have the Second Amendment. We've tried it your way. We've tried it the liberal way, to where they have gun control, and it did not help our communities, continued Jones, referring to gun laws in places like Chicago. And so I'm not willing to disarm myself. One thing I will say is I wish the left would be a little bit more honest. Can they just say they don't like the Second Amendment? You and I have said this for the longest time, that it has been the liberal black leadership in this country and the elite liberals who wish to do everything to disarm law-abiding blacks in some of the highest crime areas of the country. Now, the liberal black leadership, it might be tough to use the argument of white privilege, but to the elite in Washington, D.C., to the elite in Hollywood, to the elite like Jimmy Kimmel, to the elite Hollywood folks that live up in their gated community with the most sophisticated security systems and their armed guards perched on their high towers with their moats surrounding their castle and lecturing you that you should not be able to protect yourself. If you're not rich, if you're not famous, you should not have the same ability as we do. Ah, I like the fact that he has been called out for clearly stating his white privilege.
Yes.
Jimmy Kimmel, white privileged.
Well, when you're going to start that narrative and when you're going to start that kind of finger pointing, wait until it comes back at you. And my question is, how would Kimmel respond to that?
Yeah. You've got your security. I'm sure there's security here with people with guns, mm-hmm. right? Protecting
right.
you.
Right.
You've got your own private security.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you live in a place that has a lot of security. And you have private bodyguards.
Mm-hmm.
You're that famous.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the public eye. You have someone else carrying your guns. Most people aren't rich from like you. So, Jimmy, stop. Oh, man, imagine being a guest.
Yeah. It's very simple.
Stop being somebody who is blatantly, obviously promoting your white privilege.
Yeah, it's very simple.
Oh, man.
I get to have it because I can pay for it.
Right.
You can't because you're too stupid to carry your own gun. But time and time again, they walk themselves right into it. And then they wonder, you know, how Donald Trump becomes president. They wonder how the Republicans, beyond Donald Trump, the Republicans had a massive sweep in 2016. Well, this is why. You're out of touch with the rest of America. And so is your party.
One of the other narratives that has come up after the last couple of school shootings, and this has been promoted a lot by conservatives, which I think is a very important argument to make,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, the left automatically says guns must go.
Right.
But as we know, we've had much easier access to guns in our history. Guns were actually easier to access years ago, yet these things didn't happen. So since you're addressing the fact that you wish all Americans to give up their Second Amendment right and believe it's antiquated, then should we think about giving up other rights? Because the fact of if it isn't the gun, because there was easier access to guns, is apparently the environment and what we are teaching our kids. So should we be teaching our kids something differently? By the way, David French had an article in National Review where he was talking about some of the studies showing that even in this case, a kid wearing the trench coat, that school shooting since, you know, the Columbine with Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris,
mm-hmm.
Have led the imagery of the majority of school shootings since that point.
Right.
Now, and he said that because it's part of the popular culture, one of the points brought from that is what somebody else actually does can influence other people. Mm-hmm. So what you actually see, what your environment is, what you respond to, what is pounded into your head over and over again by the media, whatever, can have an effect on you. Well, then should we stop? Should if you believe that other people, French didn't say this, I'm asking this question, that if we're being told that everybody needs to give up their guns or some form of guns or, you know, all their guns, because that was what even the Democrats proposed in the legislation where they really wished to get rid of all semi-automatics, which was the majority of guns out there, then if you expect Americans to give up their Second Amendment rights, then should we be willing to give up other rights? Are there other First Amendment rights that should be restricted because of it?
Right.
Should First Amendment rights go? If Second Amendment rights, if you have no problem with that, then why not other rights? You don't have to say that.
Right.
You don't have to produce that movie. You don't have to cover that story.
Right.
Nobody has to do anything because that's what we hear. You don't have to have that gun. Well, good. You don't have to say that. TV stations don't have to promote that. Government should control all of that, too. If there's a shooting, no government coverage, no coverage of it. The government should stop coverage of it.
Right. To protect others.
To protect others. So where are we going to go? But that narrative has been brought up that, wait a minute, what about how we teach our kids? What about the fact that, you know, maybe we should bring values back in?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe kids should be, hey, you never know, maybe kids should be forced to say the Pledge of Allegiance. I'm just throwing all this stuff up since people should be forced to give up their guns. People should be forced then to do other things to ensure that they have the correct mindset. Right?
I mean, what is it? What are the values we're teaching in schools? What are we teaching kids to do? Something has changed. Guns were easily acceptable in the past. And now you have a totally different society inside of a public school. You think about how different it was, even from the times that you and I went to public schools. It starts to change. It's a different mentality in terms of what can be, how the children can be disciplined. Because if you think about that, what is the real leadership? Of course, it starts in the home. But how do children really learn? Well, children actually, they, in fact, require discipline, but it is their nature to be drawn, to be molded by such discipline. And yet, we refuse to issue discipline at schools.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Jim in Chicago. Jim, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Do you remember over the last year you've mentioned, why doesn't Trump quit out the tweeting, the nonsense? He should focus on his accomplishments and everything he's doing. Well, now you've seen the result of that. He got people that are his enemies in the political establishment and in the media now, in the last week, have defended terrorists in Israel, and they've defended MS-13. And the reason why they did that is because for the last year, he knew that he could push their buttons and get them to overreact with outrage, and now they can't stop themselves. It's like a Pavlov's dog. They've been so conditioned now that anything that he puts out, they are going to see it that way.
You know, I said something, I think, off the air a few weeks ago to that effect, Jim. I said, you know, part of me just thinks that there's that a lot of the time that the president's really just toying with the media.
Well, we've talked about that on the air publicly, that he's screwing with them.
And it was something, well, I was referencing something very specific, and I wasn't sure in that moment, and I'm still not sure, but there's no doubt that at times he is doing that. There's no doubt in my mind that he loves that back and forth because he knows that they back themselves into a corner. They paint themselves into a corner most often with situations like this. And why is that? Well, look, his answer on MS-13 was very clear. He was just answering a question. It was very clearly he was talking about MS-13. However, the very predictable media, I don't know in that moment if he made a conscious decision, you know, to toy with the media, but there's no doubt they're very predictable in how they react to him.
Yeah, and I mean, benefit him. The things from the last week weren't tweets.
No. And when you look at, you know, what happened in Israel and what was going on there, that wasn't necessarily deliberate. But it certainly does benefit him. And maybe the setting up was all along that toying back and forth just to get them worked up and emotional about things, knowing that eventually they would come to this point, which they did. And for VDO Roadlog, here's your forecast.
You may recall last Monday I had mentioned that for the week ahead we would see 3 to 5 inches of rain for locations in the northeast, east, and south. And we're going to repeat that forecast for the week ahead. Another 3 to 5, possibly 6 inches of rain for many of those areas that saw that amount last week. We'll also see the central plains of Nebraska and Kansas stay wet this week with upwards of 4 to 5 inches of rain. The dry areas continue to be most of California, the desert southwest, and Texas without a lot of rain for the week ahead. Surprisingly, there has been a lot of progress this week in corn planting. Of the 18 states that report, 62% of the corn crop is planted. The average for this time of year, 63%. Temperatures today, 90s in the desert southwest and southern plains, 80s on the eastern seaboard, 92 in Vegas, 70s for the west coast, 58 in Chicago. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Have no fear. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. Hi. So you ready?
All right. I don't know. For what?
Well, I just because the last caller was talking about the MS-13 thing, so I just it reminded me of something.
Oh.
The Daily Wire broke this down about Anna Navarro, who was a political pundit and not a Trump fan at all.
Right.
And she was on New Day. This goes back to May 17th, okay?
All right.
The day after it came out, you know, what the president had said in that law enforcement meeting when asked specifically about MS-13. Now, I originally played it just to hear what Anna Navarro had to say, and then something came up which I must make note of.
Okay.
Concerning the concept of fake news.
All right.
And the person that just hates it when you accuse him of fake news. But this may be a perfect opportunity to do that. But first, I want to play this audio cut from New Day and Chris Cuomo with Anna Navarro going back to May 17th. Here we go. On the president and the whole MS-13 thing.
I'm a lot more concerned of when he does things like call immigrants animals, when we start dehumanizing people. He says he was talking about, the White House says he was talking about MS-13.
Well, let's play the sound. Here's the sound.
We have people coming into the country, or trying to come in. We're stopping a lot of them. But we're taking people out of the country. You wouldn't believe how bad these people are. These aren't people. These are animals.
Now, the defense is that he was following up by a statement of a sheriff saying that this is MS-13. He was just talking about MS-13. Good enough?
No, not good enough. Not good enough from a president who has called countries in Central America.
Well, here's the problem with that defense, her defense, is that it's not the entire equation. And it's also not her entire background, is it?
No, it isn't, because Anna Navarro, back in October 10th of 2016, should Donald Trump drop out of the race? Yes, he should drop out of the human race. He is an animal. Apologies to animals. Excuse me, on October 9th. So October 20th. Should Donald Trump drop out of the race? Yes, he should drop out of the human race. He is an animal. Apologies to animals.
Well, again, that's the inconsistency, of course. You're not going to complete the equation, and you don't want people to remember what you said in the past about your political enemy.
The other point is Chris Cuomo, who gets so upset if you accuse him of fake news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he mentioned afterwards that Trump was responding to the sheriff's question, but it changes the whole context when you hear her specific question, how pointed it was, and then his response in talking about the people
mm-hmm.
that were coming in. Then it makes total and complete sense. Chris Cuomo, who says he, you know, gets so upset when you accuse him of fake news, but by him not playing it and putting it in the full context, that's fake news. So there you go.
Wow.
But nobody should call it. But there's her tweet from October 9th, 2016. Should Donald Trump drop out of the race? Yes, he should drop out of the human race. He is an animal. Apologies to animals.
Yeah, right.
So can you go any further?
No. Plenty of hypocrisy to go around on the left. Their actions, their words. If it's somebody we hate, that's fine. If it's hardened, murderous criminals, how dare you?
So there you go. Hmm. Just wanted to make sure that we played that for you. So to your calls and comments we go. 866-90-RED-EYE. Let us go to Amber in Morristown, Tennessee. Amber, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi. I was calling about the gun issues you guys were talking about a few minutes ago. I think it all starts with disciplining children also, because parents are too scared to spank their children anymore, and then they take paddling out of schools, and so it causes kids to bully, and then the teachers get scared and they don't want to deal with the issue, and so then it causes a kid to come up and blow up the school.
Well, you know, our thing is, because we could sit there and give people call all day saying what they believe the problem and the challenge is. Our point is, it when you look at the Parkland school and for example Parkland in Florida,
mm-hmm.
and how that shooter was able actually to be in a program where things that would be considered as misdemeanors were just considered school infractions, and he wasn't put into law enforcement because of the fact that we cannot have the perception that, you know, that a member of a certain race and or gender, whatever, commits more of a percentage of the crimes, and so we must hide the truth of what's going on. Our point is, it is the left that's calling for us to give up our rights. So then fine, then other people should give up their rights too. If it stops the shooting, everybody should be willing to give up their rights. That was the whole thing with Parkland. Remember when they put in the clear backpacks and the kids went, wait a minute, what about my First Amendment rights? Sorry, you don't have them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they were upset when they found out that they didn't have their rights to have a non-clear backpack.
Right.
My privacy, well, you're saying that other people's rights should go away. So why are you complaining when the liberals take away your rights, what you perceive as your rights? Isn't that what you're asking for? I don't think anybody ever asked David Hogue that direct question.
Right.
And it should have been asked. By the way, he had a comment over the weekend, which I said, oh, no, that's, again, this proves that he has the complete, you know, people were criticizing for saying, look, kids shouldn't be able to speak. They're just kids. What do they know about life? And we said just the opposite. We just said, no, these kids are coming out with the same liberal talking points as any 50-year-old liberal.
Yep.
So don't treat them as children or act like, you know, that they have childish opinions. Their opinions are the opinions of the adult liberals out there.
This is what, again, the idea, the entire design. And it doesn't, and with that mindset, it doesn't change over the years. Doesn't matter if they're kids in high school or somebody who's retired. The idea is the idea. What are they saying differently than somebody who's 65 and is a liberal?
Nothing. So, we just said, nope, we need to treat their opinions as if they have the same credibility as any adult liberal.
Well, because if you're saying that their opinion is uninformed, yeah, I would agree. Not necessarily due to their age, though.
Right. Let us go to Jonathan in Albuquerque. Jonathan, hi, you're on Rod Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi. So my subject is on the... I know it's a broad stroke and whatnot because everyone goes, well, how can we fix the kids and stuff? And this is just an observation. My daughter is 4 years old. I had recently put her into school. She had basically one of the other little kids, a little older because, you know, up to five and whatnot. And he was bullying her. And they're like, oh, how cute. They're playing. It's like, no, they're not playing. My daughter's in tears. That's not okay. And I brought it up to the teacher. Teacher didn't care. And whenever I told my daughter, you tell him no, I don't appreciate that, stand up to him, then she got in trouble for defending herself. And we're making victims in the schools. That's all we're doing. We're teaching them from a young age to become a victim and to have other people either take care of it or just sit there silently.
Well, I remember, again, that happened even when that goes back, you know, 40 years ago, even longer. When I was in junior high school and you know, the bullies were around, but the bullies, you know, they just didn't say things. They came and they, you know, it was physical violence. And I was in one class and the bully and his buddies, they picked out one kid every day and said, we're going to beat the crap out of you. And they did. And they got to me and said, don't even try. And I'm just a little shrimp. And they didn't think, they had no fear of me whatsoever. And so they couldn't get me in class. Because I was aware and just stood up against him, and the teacher didn't even pay attention. And when we left class, walking down the hallway, and the kid, I figured, okay, it's over, with his buddies came, and he just took his fist and he punched it in my back. The other kids pushed me into the locker. My books went flying all over the place, and they kept running down the hallway thinking I was never going to come after them. Well, they stopped, and I never stopped. I mean, I came straight at them, and hit the guy full force, tackled him on the ground, ripped his shirt, was beating his face. This is junior high. Well, we get pulled to the principal's office. I'm going to have to suspend you both. I said, why? I'm defending myself. They attacked me. I defend myself. And the principal says, well, there's no fighting allowed. I said, but he attacked me. And he said, we're going to have to call your parents. I said, go ahead. You know my dad. Call him.
Yeah, that's nothing new. That's been going on, yeah, you know,
said,
for ages.
I said, yeah, you know, call my dad. And I'll never forget, the principal says, well, how about we get you a shirt? Are both of you willing to forget it and never let this happen again? I said, I didn't attack anybody. Mm-hmm. I won't happen to me again unless he, and he says, well, I won't bother him again. He never did. Mm-hmm. And then it was over. Today, both of you would get suspended.
Yeah.
Was I wrong to retaliate as I did?
Mm-hmm.
In junior high? I don't believe so.
Well,
but in today's environment, I would be wrong and I would be punished and I would be suspended for, in essence, because they would say, well, you weren't defending yourself. The incident already happened. You should have gone to the teacher is what we would get. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't have chased him down the hallway and tackled him and beat his face.
Yeah. And beyond that, I mean, the lack of authority for teachers to discipline children.
Yeah.
The one-size-fits-all, zero-tolerance type policies that have been in place for many years in public schools, all of that has an effect. I'm not going to pretend to play psychologist when it comes to these kids who commit these heinous acts. Because I don't know what that mentality is. That's something extremely foreign to my mind. It's extremely foreign to most people's minds. You know, committing such a heinous act, taking multiple lives.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up following the top of the hour, a spy in the Trump campaign, and Devin Nunes says he won't meet with Department of Justice officials until the documents are handed over. He said he will refuse to meet with those officials until they hand over the documents connected to the FBI source who spoke with the Trump campaign aides in 2016 about Russian interference in the election. The Hill reported on Sunday. So this is going to be interesting because we know who the source is now and all that. So, you know, he said, you know, is the he had said earlier, even last week, and then Sen Nunberg, the former Trump campaign person back from 2011 through 2015, really not part of the, you know, the 2016 Trump campaign at all, stated that he's been told that there might have been other informants.
Mm-hmm. And Nunes saying that, kind of alluding to that last week, saying at least one, and then saying over the weekend, he was asked, is it possible that there was more than one? And he said it is possible. And so I guess we'll find that out as soon as the Oversight Committee gets the Department of Justice paperwork.
I mean, it's so huge.
Yeah.
When you and again, the royal wedding. But when I look at it in the context of history,
mm-hmm.
and Kimberly Strauss talked about that with Tucker Carlson, just how unbelievably big that is.
Oh, yeah.
When you look at it, whether it's the combination of the FISA warrant and the informant who was spying on the Trump campaign, or the spy who was informing, the spy who was spying, or the informant who was spying.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, spying was being done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's key. I don't remember that happening again against an active campaign.
Right. No. No. And the question would be why? Why is that person there? Who in any position of authority?
And what was the justification for?
Right. Why would you put someone there? Based on what? Based on what suspicions? And those suspicions would be built on certain known things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Communications, or associations, or the actions of others. And I think those questions all have to be asked in order to get us to the very real beginning of that investigation.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.